Are you ready, Alabama?
Oh, the band is out on the field!
The band is leaving the field.
And one time, at band camp,
love the drum.
Man, I do love my drum.
You say that's what she said one more time, I'm gonna pop you.
You're welcome to join the doghouse.
Oh God, I'm so sorry, I keep doing that.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
Be a dog.
The clock starts on my whistle.
How you doing?
It's time for the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Here he is, the head of the household. Here's drum major Big Dog. It's Tom Abraham.
We strong.
You all may be taking the week off, right, this week, but I'm not.
So on Wednesday, I was very irritated and annoyed that the U.S. did not make the World Cup. And I went on this epic rant, which I posted, by the way, on my personal page, not on my show page. I just want to say that. I posted it on my personal page, not on the fan page. But I did accentuate the rant on the air that day, and we spent a lot of time on it. And there were a bunch of responses, some very long-winded responses to the posting on the Facebook page. And basically my rant being that we suck at the sport. We should just stop it altogether, put the money into the women's sport, whatever. It doesn't make any sense for us. Kids don't grow up wanting to do it. It's not our sport. You know, yada, yada, yada. Typical ugly American type response to us missing the World Cup. Anything we can't be in the top 32 in, you know, we shouldn't do. And amongst the responses was this one from our next guest, Josh Bean from AL.com. And it was simple. This is the dumbest thing I've read on the internet today. And he didn't leave it there. No, he didn't. He would go beyond there. By a long shot. Not even like by a little bit. Oh, this, you just edged out. No. By a long shot. So he joins us now on the Woody Anderson Ford VIP hotline. Josh, I mean, come on. By a long shot, Josh? I mean, it wasn't even close. There wasn't anything that was even a little bit dumb. Not even a little bit close.
I got two problems. One is, I never like the, if we can't be good at something, let's abandon it.
Yeah.
That's terribly un-American. We should try to be great at everything.
Right.
And there were lots of people, you know, very disappointed, and there were lots of different takes on the U.S. missing out on the World Cup. But, you know, that was really my biggest thing was, look, we should just get better at it, and we ought to be able to find a way to do that.
How about my theory that this just isn't our sport? In as much as this, when I bounced my sons on my knees, I would tell them stories about Reggie Jackson and the night he hit three home runs against the Dodgers. Or I'd tell them about, you know, Gale Sayers, or I'd tell them about, you know, whatever it is, a miracle on ice, and so on. Nobody in this country really grows up talking about, hey, remember that time we made it to the quarterfinals against Germany? You remember that MLS game when so-and-so? It's not our thing. You know what I mean? Is there a legitimate thought there that this is
not
our thing?
But I don't think swimming is our thing either. And we dominate in the Olympics in swimming every year.
Yeah.
So, you know, yes, I agree with you. I think that it is certainly way down the list of sports of national interest. And I don't think our very best elite athletes growing up wanting to do it. And so you're right on with that. But I do think that, you know, USA Soccer can do some better things in, you know, finding and developing those elite players.
Right.
And trying to build a better system so that we don't, you know, that USA Soccer just doesn't happen again. I mean, when there's 32 teams get in the tournament, you'd expect that you're at least going to get in the tournament. And it was very embarrassing for the
very
the
embarrassing.
Men's
team that was
get there.
Yeah, and that was why I was saying, I mean, it's just it's embarrassing. All of these years have gone by that we haven't won one of these things. We haven't gotten to a final. We haven't gotten to a Final Four. And I used to always be of the opinion too. I used to throw this out there. And by the way, I do have some soccer chops. I was on the field when the Rochester Raging Rhinos won the U.S. Open Cup by beating the Colorado Rapids in 1998. I was the sideline reporter, and I was doing interviews, and I was very much, you know, loved the guys. They're very athletic. This is not an easy sport. People who think it's not easy. But having said that, I used to be of the opinion that, well, what if, you know, LeBron James was our goalie and Adrian Peterson and Chris Johnson were on the front line and Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo were fullbacks and Bryce Harper played it, you know, all our best athletes. But I've gotten away from that take in as much as that, Josh, we got 323 million people. 323 million people. We got beat by a country that's got 1.5 million that is a vacation destination, an island. I mean, how can we not come up with 20 dudes that could play this sport?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. And like I said, I think that there needs to be some changes in the way that the sport is governed and the way that players are identified and developed. But yeah, I mean, sometimes you have something like this, an embarrassing episode happens, and it kind of flips the script and people want to do better. I hope that's what happens here. I hope that, you know, I think that it's a sport that has grown a lot, at least in the number of people, kids playing it in the country, but that has not, at least on the men's side, it has not translated into international success. Now we have seen the women's team has been fantastic and remains an elite team. And so, you know, I think that's another reason that it's so surprising that the men's team has not been able to get it together.
I think women's sports are a higher priority in our country than they are in other countries. I don't think they focus on their women's side the way we do on ours on all aspects of it. I think that's part of it. And I do think we get some of our best athletes, female athletes, playing soccer as well. But, you know, look, hockey, right? I mean, there's such a small sliver of our country that's hockey country. The rest of it's all north of the border into Canada. Yet in 1960, we won gold in the Olympics. 1980, we won gold in the Olympics. World Cup after World Cup of hockey, we're in the Final Four or in the final or playing Canada for the World Championship or whatever. So we're very, very competitive in hockey. If we're that competitive in hockey, we should be able to be competitive in soccer.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with you.
Yeah. All right, let's get to something that everybody gets up. I thought you would never talk to me again. I mean, when you said the way, I mean, like, did you read the whole, the internet's a pretty big thing, you know. There could have been some other stupider things on there
said. There probably were dumber things on the internet, but at least the things that I saw that day, I thought that was the dumbest.
Scalise came on yesterday, and I told him, I says, look, I think I'm in trouble with Bean. He says, why? I says, he said I wrote the stupidest thing he read on the internet. Like, I lost the internet. I didn't win the internet. I lost the internet that day. He said, Bean will still come on with you. He's a nice guy. I said, oh, okay. I'm glad.
Well, and to be fair, there's lots of times when I've probably written the dumbest thing on the internet.
I haven't come across that yet, but in any event, you know, we'll see. All right. A lot of big football going on. Update us, by the way, on what went on last night. Any of the games that we had last night that I didn't even look at the results today.
Yeah, so you know, we had some games last night. In fact, we had a few that got moved to last night. You know, because of the race at Talladega. You know,
yeah.
Lincoln High School, which is not far from there, played last night. Talladega County Central, which is not far from there, played last night. You know, so we did have some games. Leeds played; they won. To me, the most impressive game last night was Winona against Moody. I think we all expected Winona to win, but they only gave up 53 yards of total offense. They didn't give up a first down in the second half. Moody only finished with one first down in the game. I mean, those numbers were ridiculous. So mm-hmm. That one really jumped off the page when you looked at the stat sheet.
Were you surprised at the ease in which Hewitt Trussville took out Bob Jones last week in Huntsville, 52-18?
Yeah, I was. I mean, I was not surprised Hewitt Trussville won the game. I was surprised at the margin. You know, that was a real challenge for Hewitt Trussville. Long trip. They hadn't had to deal with anything like that all year. You just wondered how all of that might affect them, and the truth was it didn't affect them at all. Offensively, they have been so good against everybody. You know, I put up 50-plus again last week. Paul Tyson seems in total control of that offense, even though this is his first year in the program. This is his first year to start on the varsity level. They've just really got it rolling right now, and it you know, that they went 10-0 last year and then got upset by Gadsden City in the playoffs. They're playing like, you know, they're playing like a team that went 10-0 last year. They're playing like a real contender.
You know, Tom Luganbill joins us every Monday on the show. Of course, among his other duties, the director of recruiting for ESPN, and he said Paul Tyson's on his radar. He's on their radar there. I mean, they know they're watching. They know what's going on. There's three really good quarterbacks in the state right now. They're juniors, and you know, of course, along with Bo Nix and little Tua's little brother, the Tango Viola kid. And but he said that the Paul Tyson kid is a kid that a lot of people are taking a good hard look at now. And you know, the big question there is how will he fill out Tua's body physically.
Yeah, I mean, he's still got some – I mean, I think all three of those guys probably still have some growing to do. But, you know, the offense that he's playing in, you know, requires you to make some quick decisions. It requires you to be able to throw and run. And, look, he's got some – it's no surprise, no secret. He's got some good weapons around him, mm-hmm. and that certainly helps. But – you know, he seems to be making all the right decisions. And I say this about quarterbacks. You know, quarterback is a decision position. There's lots of guys that can throw it a long way, but can you make the right decision and the right read based on what you've been taught? And the success he's having, he's showing that he can make the right decisions.
No question about it. And now you would think that Sparkman, one of the good stories in North Alabama in terms of Laron White taking over there, and has them to a 5-1 start on the season, 3-1 in the region. Very, very tough assignment for them there tonight. If Sparkman can hang in that thing in any way, shape, or form, and keep them in the 30s, Hewitt Trustville, I think that would be a win for Sparkman. It's going to be a tough task down there tonight.
Oh, and there's no question that this is a big test for Sparkman. You know, again, long trip. You wonder how a team will deal with that long bus ride. But once you get there, you got to play that really good Hewitt Trustville team. Sparkman is 5-1. So, you know, the real question is, are they 5-1 good or you know, are they still really in that rebuilding phase? We'll find out some answers to that a little bit tonight. But, you know, I would say at this point in the season, based on what we know about teams all over the place, Laron White's probably the clubhouse leader for Coach of the Year. I mean, to get it turned around, to already have 5 wins at that program that's really struggling has been really impressive.
I still like the job that Coach English has done over there at Grissom as well, because I think that is even more of a culture change than that Sparkman. I mean, Sparkman has been scrappy at times. You know, they've made the playoffs a few times back 10 years ago. And, you know, there's times every once in a while to kind of raise up and do something. Grissom has been a nightmare for a long time. And now, you know, they got whacked. Buckhorn got whacked last week. Buckhorn's having just an awful time of it so far this year. And those two teams get together almost like ships passing in the night. You know, I would not be surprised at all to see Grissom with a big win against Buckhorn, which would be like their third or fourth win this season. They haven't won three or four games in the last 5 years, I don't think. 6 years, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, Grissom has played really, really well, and you're right. That's been a really good story in North Alabama. You know, those two teams actually played last night, and Buckhorn eked one out.
Oh, that was last night? Oh, I thought that was tonight. Oh, that was last night. Yeah. Okay. And Buckhorn beat them. Wow. That's a good win for Buckhorn.
Yeah, and it was, you know, that was one where, you know, we do our picks every week, and frankly, I picked Grissom. It seemed like that was the team that was trending up a little bit. But Buckhorn, you know, has now, you know, found a way to win a couple. You know, they've got 3 wins now. You know, they're kind of trending up a little bit. But Grissom scored, I think, the first drive last night, and then Buckhorn found a way to pretty much shut them down the rest of the night. So, you know, Bucks struggled some in the early part of the season, but you know, we'll see if that win over Grissom can kind of turn their season around a little bit.
See, now that's the stupidest thing that we've heard on the show today is me talking about a game that happened last night like it was going to happen tonight. See, I told you I'm good for this once a day anyway. I try to, you know, keep it in the ballpark here every once in a while. But Austin, you know, another team that continues to roll. They're playing great. They're ranked number one. And this Asa Martin is out of control. I mean, he's almost 1,200 yards now, 15 touchdowns, and another 305 yards last week. And they get a decent Hartzell team, but you just this is going to be one of those epic seasons when it's all said and done for Asa Martin. If they, assuming they play 14, 15 games, this is going to be one of those, you know, he had 3,000 yards rushing type years.
Yeah, and, you know, the amazing thing about his numbers is he's playing with another really capable back. So it's not, yeah. You know, it's not as if he's, you know, carrying it the 50-something times like LaDainian Webb did in the state championship game last year. You know, he's splitting some time, which I think that's going to be better for him. It's going to be better for them in the long run. But he's been amazing. And not only is he putting up, or his stats big, but he's making a ton of big plays. And so, you know, as that trend continues to happen, that just opens up things for other players. So, you know, pretty cool that you know, he played last year at IMG Academy, came back to play at Austin this year, and that really seems to be paying off for him.
Yeah, and I don't have his exact numbers in front of me, but am I lying if I say I think he's averaging like 11 or 12 yards a carry or something?
Yeah, it's an amazing number. You know, yeah. I think it may be up over 13 yards a carry after that huge 300-yard night he had last week. And, you know, he's committed to Auburn, and he's playing like a Mr. Football is what he's playing like. So we'll see how all that works out. You know, we mentioned the quarterbacks. There are a number of really good Mr. Football candidates, but he's the guy so far that seems to be a huge difference maker. And they are number one. They're undefeated. You know, how far teams go in the playoffs can make a difference in that Mr. Football conversation. But – you know, he's playing great right now.
I don't expect that Kerryon Johnson and Cam Petway, you know, are going to be around next year. That's a kid that's going to play next year, I think, for Auburn. I mean, there's an excellent chance that he, you know, gets a lot of action his first year, kind of like Kerryon Johnson did.
Yeah, and, you know, to be fair, those two guys are built very similarly. You know, he's not a big 230-pound
No, he's not the big
guy like Bo Scarborough is at Alabama. You know, but we see the success that Kerryon Johnson has in that Auburn offense, and these guys are similar size, probably similar speed, and their profile is really similar. So when we see the success that Kerryon can have in that offense, I think it's easy to look at Asa Martin and go, wow, he could really be a plug-and-play player there.
And a game that will have a lot of talent on the field that will be fun for folks who want to get out there tonight on a beautiful night, Milton Frank Stadium. Lee Huntsville against Mae Jamison, you know, it's the old J.O. Johnson versus Lee deal, really. I mean, for all intents and purposes, but both these teams playing pretty well, and that ought to be a really fun a fun game as well.
Yeah, anytime you have a rivalry like that, you know, the best rivalries are part of it is proximity and history, and you know, those two schools, like you said, Mae Jamison's a new school, but it's really J.O. Johnson with a new name. So, yeah. You know, the players know each other. You know, it's a long-time rivalry. Should be fun for both sides. And, you know, Mae Jemison is a team that has played pretty well this year. You know, they got beat a couple of weeks ago. But they played really well all year long. And Lee's probably been a little bit of a surprise, so that one should be fun tonight.
All right, man. Appreciate you as always. Thanks for going easy on me and not writing like a paragraph about how stupid my take was, and just being very succinct. That was a good job with you. It was a very clearly written sentence. I really had a good time. We read it immediately when it popped up during the show on Wednesday, and had a great deal of fun with the by a long shot. I mean, that was the best part about that sentence was the by a long shot. You know, just to kind of create that separation between me and everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad I could be of service.
All right, man. Thanks. I appreciate you, Josh.
Hey, thanks. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks. You too, Josh Bean. Yeah. So now I got the story. So Grissom scores on their third play of the game last night? They score on the third play of the game last night, and all they can get the rest of the way was a safety. And Buckhorn figures out a way to score 13 points. T-Mac, a 13-8 high school game. The heck is that?
I'm asleep. That's what that is. That is boring.
No, not necessarily. We were just talking about defense.
Boring.
Maybe it was a good, hard-fought, battling defensive game with great defense being played. It might have been a fight on the short bus offensively.
Maybe.
It could have been a good slobber knocker.
If it was,
I'm going to tell you right now.
I can get behind it if it was. We go watch Randolph play every week, and those games usually aren't very high scoring. They blew out New Hope week two, but it was like they put up 50 points at halftime. But other than that, Randolph runs the ball, drains the clock, and they play really good defense. So I guess I should not judge on the score there. I can get behind a good defensive game.
One of the top five, and I'm just saying it off the top of my head, maybe number one, one of the top five football games that I've ever been at. No, it's not number one. I should try and figure out like the top five games I've ever seen with my eyeballs. One of the top five football games I have ever been at in my entire life was 6-3 Alabama over Tennessee. I mean, that was amazing. It was an incredible football game. I thought the press box was going to fall down. The place was literally shaking. And when they got that stop and that fumble through the end zone, as it goes into the lore as the Rocky stop, I think it was Roman Harper maybe that caused that hit and that ball goes out the back of the end. It hurt my head. It was so loud, my head hurt. I mean, the intensity of a 6-3 game like that, I don't want that every week. But that was amazing, amazing football game.
Yeah, but like I said, it has to be in context. If it's good defense, and you know it's good defense, then there it is. But if it's, you know, inept offense, then I'm not really behind it. You know what I mean? You can tell. You, when you watch a game that's low scoring, if you actually watch the game, you can tell which one it is.
Oh, yeah. No, you know when you're looking at crap offenses.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't sit with crap offense. I mean, I know what you're saying there. All right, let's get a break. When we come back, final guest of the day every Friday is Clinton Lamb from SaturdayDownSouth.com. He's coming up next right here on 730-1039, The Ump. Of all the college fight songs, that's like one of them. I thought I'd just say that. Welcome back, Tom Abraham Show. A chance to spend a few minutes now, as we do every Friday, with Clinton Lamb from SaturdayDownSouth.com. Joins us to talk a little Tide, who have Arkansas in the house on Saturday night. Clint, welcome in. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today, Tom?
I'm fantastic. And so here comes Arkansas. Let's talk about some of the things that went on during the week, including the broken leg that Brandon Kennedy suffered. Do you know? I mean, this isn't just a nothing thing just because he's not a starter. I mean, this is a quality depth guy, a guy who moves up and down the line a little bit, a valuable piece in the cog anyway. But how does something like that happen in a practice? I mean, we don't really think about there being a lot of contact in a practice in a game week a couple of days before a game. But do you know any of the details as to exactly how it happened?
I haven't heard anything. I would be interested to know that as well. I do know that we just, kind of checked over the halfway point of the season, but you never want to lose depth along your offensive line, especially with a stretch that Alabama's got coming up, which get teams like Tennessee, LSU, Auburn, and then potentially Georgia if they're able to make it to the SEC championship. So it is a much bigger loss than people realize. He had played a lot of different positions, like you had said, both offensive guard positions. It sees some snaps at center. And then, of course, he's just one of those kind of guys that is a plug and play as far as depth goes on the interior of Alabama's offensive line. So it is a pretty big loss.
Yeah. And he was taking snaps with the first team before the Texas A&M game as well. So, I mean, he was, maybe the sixth or seventh, maybe seventh offensive lineman on the interior. Of the interior, he was if you look at the two guards in the center, he's probably the fourth guy, maybe fourth or fifth guy there in line.
He was. And yeah. I do know earlier on in the season, they had kind of flirted with the idea of sliding Matt Womack to right guard and inserting Jedrick Wills into the starting line of the right tackle if something happened with Lester Cotton. He was kind of banged up following the Florida State game. But overall, I think that if it was anything on the left side of the offensive line, left guard, center, I do think that it would actually have been Kennedy. So he is a big loss.
Damian Harris is averaging 8.4 yards per carry, almost 8.5 yards a carry. You wrote a piece about this earlier this week. It almost seems ludicrous because you know, he wasn't the Alabama back that was on the first or second team of the preseason SEC team. All the talk was Bo Scarborough, but we've been talking about Damian Harris. Not to take anything away from Bo, but Damian's been great since the first snap he's taken out there. But you wrote an interesting piece putting him in that class of Nick Chubb and Kerryon Johnson and Darius Geis, who you know, we haven't seen him be healthy yet. But talk a little bit about Damian Harris and how he stacks up, because certainly his numbers really do stack up.
Well, I just think him as a player with the lost weight that he had over the offseason, I think he lost about 7 or 8 pounds. And then, of course, coming off of that high ankle sprain, which definitely hindered him last season, he's looked a lot more explosive. He's got excellent vision. His jump cut is very similar to a Mark Ingram's back when he was at Alabama. And he's just one of those guys where he does a lot with a lot less than the other running backs you compare him to, like a Kerryon Johnson, a Darius Geis, or a Nick Chubb. Chubb, of those guys, between Damian Harris, Kerryon Johnson, and Darius Geis, all mm-hmm. three of those guys have an argument that could be made, and that includes Geis, even though he's been banged up this season. That has played a huge role in him not being as effective of a runner this season as he was last year. But when you look at Damian Harris and the fact that he's only got 59 carries on the season, and right. guys like Nick Chubb and Kerryon Johnson are sitting up there in the high 80s, low 90s, so they've gotten a significant amount more as far as the work that they've seen, and he's been able to put up outstanding numbers regardless. As far as Nick Chubb and his relation to Damian Harris, Nick Chubb also has to share the backfield with multiple guys, including Sonny Michel and guys like that. So he also has seen a significant percentage of the team's carries compared to Damian Harris as well. So I have been very impressed with him this season.
Yeah, he's not even a leading rusher for Alabama. That goes to Jalen Hurts, who has 517 yards on 10 more carries than Damian Harris. But just to put it in relation, he's got 500 yards straight up on 59 carries this season. Benny Snell at Kentucky has 523 yards. He has 126 carries. I mean, he has twice as many carries as Damian Harris. He's got 23 more yards. So you're right. I mean, it gives you an idea. John Kelly has carried it just under 100 times. Chubb, 91. Kerryon Johnson, 85. I've been very impressed by Kerryon Johnson and what he's done as well, in and out of there because of injury. But Harris just keeps trucking along. And the thing is, that's keeping, you know, it's keeping Bo Scarborough fresh, and we know what happens in the second half of the season, and Najee Harris is ready to see the ball more. It's just the way they do things. They would rather have, you know, three guys that total 2,000 yards than one Derrick Henry that totals 2,000 yards if they can do it.
You're absolutely right. And another thing that has really been surprising about Harris's season so far has been the touchdowns. You look at last season, over the course, you know, he did end up dealing with an ankle sprain early on, and then that affected him throughout the course of the entire season. But he only had two all of 2016, and he's already up to seven this year. And, you know, a lot of those have come from – I know he had the 75-yard touchdown last week versus Texas A&M. He had another one that I want to say was 60-plus yards earlier in the season. I think it was versus Vanderbilt. But just he's shown breakaway speed, and I don't think anybody coming into this season thought that he had that level as far as his second year goes. So he's been able to finish a lot more runs. He's being used in goal line situations a lot more than he was last year. Really, touchdowns was the only thing that he wasn't effective at last year. He rushed for over 1,000 yards, and he averaged 7.1 yards per carry, which, if I'm not mistaken, led the SEC. He definitely showed glimpses last year, but it has absolutely been – the difference has been him being fully healthy this season.
Clint Lamb with us, SaturdayDownSouth.com. We sit here and we look at these games. These were games like, you know, this Arkansas game is a game that would have been hotly contested a few years ago. It may still be tomorrow, but right now Alabama, prohibitive favorite. There are things that they need to get better at, no question about it. And one has to be Jalen Hurts and him going downfield. Only one of 18 on the season on throws of over 20 yards downfield. And as crazy as the rushing stats look, because, I mean, as a team, they're averaging over 6.5 yards a carry. That's a first down every two handoffs. But, you know, this isn't Nebraska in the 90s. You know what I mean? This isn't Oklahoma in the 70s. You got to be able to throw the ball at some point in time when you face these two or three really good defenses that they're going to see down the road. I don't know if they can win if they can't get that part figured out.
Well, I will say that this has been one of the biggest things that I've had problems with as far as debates with people on social media and things of that nature. I understand 1 of 18 is simply unacceptable, but in no way does that fall solely on Jalen Hurts' shoulders. If you go back and watch the film, he's made a lot of very impressive throws down the field. The pass to Devontae Smith in the corner of the end zone against Florida State, that was a catchable football. It was a tad bit outside, but he still could have brought that in. He's had multiple passes that have been brought back due to pass interference calls or a holding call against Florida State on Lester Cotton, which was not a holding call. But that was a 20-yard completion that he had made down the sidelines to Judy. He's escaped the pocket. And I think Saban has kind of pointed to some of those things, too, as far as he's shown improvement. And when he escapes the pocket, he's not every play he's looking to run. And I think that when you look at defenses, they're not stacking the box as much as you would think they would based off of a 1-18 completion to attempt ratio. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that teams understand that it's been a little bit of luck involved in defense's favor when it comes to Jalen Hurts passing the ball downfield. So I do completely agree. The receivers got to bring some of those in and things of that nature. But Jalen Hurts has definitely improved as far as being a downfield passer, at least to some degree.
When you play the kind of football they're playing, it kind of creates some other problems as well. I mean, when you look at the 125 points that they were scoring against Vandy and Ole Miss, the second team almost had as many points as the first team did in those games. Now they're a 30-point favorite tomorrow. Chances are the first teamers will get 30 or 40 snaps if it goes that way. I understand they're a 35-point favorite against UT. There's a chance that is another one of those kind of games, which is wonderful for depth. But what's going to happen if this crew ever has to play 60 or 70 snaps? All the goods have to go 60 or 70 snaps. I mean, this is almost like preseason, if you will, in the NFL, where the starters play into the third quarter and that's it every game.
Right, and that is a huge concern. That's something that I actually talked about in one of my articles this week as well. I think that's why you saw some of the starters playing late against Ole Miss a couple of weeks ago, is Saban's trying to get those guys ready for four quarters of football. And I do think that you ended up seeing that becoming a problem versus Texas A&M last week, because that last drive where Kellen Mond was able to drive them right down the field, 64 yards in a matter of, I want to say it was just over a minute, left in the game, that just showed you that they're not used to playing that high level of football for that long in football games. And so that could become an issue if they don't get that worked out. But it is also very hard to leave your starters in when you're up 35, 42 points late in the game. You don't want to risk any more injury than you already are from practice to practice and, you know, the beginning of those games too. So it is a little bit of a tricky situation, and I will be interested to see how it plays out.
Finally, one of the things that we've been talking about all week long with different guys that will be covering the game or that cover Alabama is Dabo Swinney being there tomorrow to be part of the celebration of the 1992 National Championship team, which he was on. He wasn't like a big contributor to that team, but he was on that team, certainly. In your opinion, A, how will the crowd react? And will he have any orange on at all? I mean, when they announce the team and he's out there on the field, I mean, is he wearing a Clemson pin? Is he wearing a Clemson golf shirt? Is he wearing an Alabama golf shirt? You know, is he wearing a Nike shirt with nothing on it school-wise? I mean, what do you think it's going to be for him? And Do fans look at him as being the guy who denied Alabama a national championship last year, or do they look at him as a favorite son? You know, congratulations to you to get that done, and we'll see you in 3 or 4 years.
Well, that's a tough question to answer. I will say I would need the answer to what he's going to be wearing before I could answer the question of how the crowd's going to react, because I think that's going to be very dependent on that. But if I was him, I would stick with the neutral colors. That way he doesn't offend Clemson or Alabama fans. But if I had to choose, I would say he's going to wear orange, because that's who you're coaching for right now, and that's the fan base you want to keep happy in this moment. But if I was him, I'd keep it very neutral. But I would hope that the crowd would be very responsive to him. You always want to see guys that came through your program succeed, whether that be as a player, as a coach, just in any facet of life. And he's most certainly become one of college football's best coaches. So I would hope that the crowd would be welcoming to him. But I'm not entirely sure. They don't always react the way I think they're going to.
Well, see, the uniqueness of this, it's not just a guy. This is a guy that a lot of people think could be there someday, and he's a guy that a lot of fans would like to see be there someday. And so that's why I wonder if the reaction is tempered with that. I wonder if he goes with just like the Nike golf shirt with the little tiger paw on his collar or something like that, a little pin, you know, or something like that on his collar, or maybe he has an Alabama pin on one collar and the other. I mean, he's representing a national championship team at his alma mater. So, I mean, it wouldn't be outside the realm of possibility for him to drop a script day in there somewhere.
Well, you know, with us media, if he were to wear Alabama colors or any kind of logo or anything, I guarantee you that would be ran with by just about every media outlet. So I definitely don't think that he is the kind of person that's going to stir up that kind of pot, but I also am not sure he's exactly the kind of person that would show up in Clemson gear either. So I wouldn't be upset if he did, but I do know that not all fans react the same way I do, and so it will be interesting to see how that plays out.
I wonder when – you think the ceremony's at halftime or before the game or end of the first quarter? Because I wonder if he's hanging around. You know, he's going to fly in, but I wonder if he's hanging around for the entire game. You know, I'm not saying that he'll be, like, prowling the sidelines next to Nick, you know, with a headset on. Probably not. You wonder if he's going to be there for the entire game, or whether they're going to do the ceremony beforehand and then he'll be jutting out of there.
That'll be interesting too. I would think that it would be at halftime, but with the circumstances involved with it, it might be before the game. That might be one of the reasons that he agreed to come. So I'm not entirely sure, but it will be fun regardless. And like I said, you always want to support guys that have come through your program that are successful people. And he's not only a great coach, he's a great person. And so he's definitely one of those guys that's very easy to pull for. And, you know, me personally, I'll definitely be welcoming him with open arms. So,
well, one thing we know for sure is that Gene Stallings is going to get one hell of a cheer. And they're going to stand and be long and loud for Gene Stallings, as they should be. And keep in mind, he beat Alabama and Bear Bryant in the Cotton Bowl, right, back 100 years ago and with Texas A&M. But, you know, he came and won a national championship for Alabama too. So it's going to be a very moving night, I think, for Gene Stallings. I think that's the story. I mean, Dabo is a story. I think the story is Gene Stallings, because with his health, you know, you don't know when this is going to be the last time we see him there.
Very true. And, you know, I was able to listen to his interview with Paul Feinbaum a couple of days ago, and he's just an outstanding person. I could absolutely see why players would love to have played for him back in the day, and coaches to coach under him. He's just, there's very few people like Gene Stallings. And one thing's for certain, we're hoping to keep him around as long as we can, because this world needs more people like him.
Yeah. I moderated a question and answer period with him a few years ago in Huntsville at a breakfast for the downtown rescue mission with him and Gene Chizik, breakfast with the two Genes. And he's just such a delightful guy, such a great, great guy. And it was just so nice to be able to meet him and spend the time that I was able to spend with him then. And you just know you're with greatness when you're with a guy like that.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, I appreciate you. Enjoy the game, and we'll look forward to talking next week.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, thank you. All right, let's get a break. When we come back, phone lines go open. We get an update from T-Mac as well. So if you want to jump back in and get on the Friday trifecta, I'll reset it after this on 730-1039 The Ump. It's time to get an update with T-Mac. Let's get it done right now. We call this a Doghouse Sports Report.
After a three-year investigation, the NCAA could not conclude that North Carolina violated academic rules. They will avoid punishment. The investigation involved the question of whether or not UNC had created courses solely to benefit student athletes. NC State freshman point guard Braxton Beverly, however, NCAA didn't take it so easy on him because he has been ruled ineligible this season for going to class. Yeah, you heard that correctly. Beverly signed a letter of intent with Ohio State in November of last year. After head coach Thad Matta was fired, Beverly asked for and received a release from Ohio State. A month later, he signed with the NC State Wolfpack. But the firing of Thad Matta, which sparked the transfer for Beverly, happened nearly a month after summer sessions began. So in the eyes of the NCAA, he was not ruled a recruit looking to get out of a letter of intent, but a freshman looking for a transfer. U.S. men's national team coach Bruce Arena has resigned after failing to qualify the U.S. for the 2018 World Cup. This will be the first time they've failed to reach the Cup since 1986. This is the second time Arena has coached the USMNT. This time, only being an 11-month stay. And finally, Arkansas head coach Brett Bielema suggests that quarterback Austin Allen will play on Saturday against Alabama. My guess is he'll give it a go, and we'll work our way through that first half and see where we're at. Bielema said he's earned so much, and to play this game is a big deal for him. We'll continue to move and see where we're at on game day. That quote given to us by Bob Holt of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. And, oh my goodness, and for Raiders quarterback Derek Carr, I still can't believe this, will start Sunday against the Chargers. And after only missing 1 week, Big Dog, 1 week with a back fracture. I'm Tony Mack. That is your Doghouse Sports Report.
I wish I had my Mike Tyson on that. What was wrong, Mike? I broke my back.
I broke my back.
What was wrong? My back was broke. God, we used to have this bit. Oh, gosh. The whole thing. We used that audio, and then we had some, like, Broke Back Mountain.
Oh, my God.
And it was like, I broke my back, and it was pretty funny stuff.
You know what you need to get? Because it reminds me, every time you talk about racing and Dega in particular, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but did you ever see the Ricky Bobby movie?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the Baby Jesus quotes? The one where John C. Reilly, it's my favorite. It reminds every single time you talk about Talladega, it reminds me of
Dear Lord, baby Jesus, or as our brothers to the south call you, hey Zeus.
There you go.
We thank you so much for this bountiful harvest of Domino's, KFC, and the always delicious Taco Bell.
I like to think of Jesus like with giant eagle's wings.
This is the
and
one.
Singing lead vocals for Lynyrd Skynyrd with like an angel band. I like to picture Jesus in a tuxedo T-shirt because it says, like, I want to be formal, but I'm here to party,
but
too.
I'm here to party.
I like to picture Jesus in a tuxedo T-shirt because it says, like, I want to be formal, but I'm here to party, too. Because I like to party, so I like my Jesus to party.
I like to picture Jesus as a ninja fighting off evil samurai.
I like to think of Jesus, like, with giant eagle's wings and singing lead vocals for Lynyrd Skynyrd with like an angel band, and I'm in the front row and I'm hammered drunk.
Hey Cal, why don't you just shut up?
Yes ma'am.
No, I never saw it.
Oh, that's my favorite. The Eagles wings one's my favorite part because I'm in the front row and I'm hammered drunk. That's so funny. And then I like to party, so I like my Jesus to party. That's hilarious, man. That's classic. Every time you bring up Dega, every single time I think about that.
Oh, gosh. Don hit the Twitter window at Tom Abraham Show. What happened to the Friday trifecta? Don, what do you mean what happened to the Friday trifecta? We're 16 years in. Better than ever. It's bigger than ever. What happened to the Friday trifecta? I mean, are you kidding me? Really? bigger than ever. Get in on the lines now. All right, we got open lines when we return. We're resetting the Friday trifecta. One last swing through it. On the lines. You'll have all the way until game time tomorrow to get in on that bad boy. On the text window. But we're going open lines next, right here in the Tom Abraham Show. On a football Friday. At 7:30, 103.9. Dong.